All right, so as you heard there, New Zealanders and Australians will be able to travel freely between their respective countries from 11:59pm on April the 18th, when the Trans-Tasman bubble will open, says the Prime Minister. Now, Prime Minister Ardern says the bubble will not be what it was like pre-COVID. Ardern has warned of flyer beware. People will need to plan for the possibility of having travel disrupted if there is an outbreak, she explained. And Prime Minister Ardern says a traffic light system with three levels, continue, pause, suspend, will manage the Trans-Tasman bubble. Pause would be a temporary halt to travel, and suspend would be longer term if there's a more serious outbreak in Australia. She also said the government does not anticipate a large number of MIQ spaces will be open when the Trans-Tasman bubble commences, and that the bubble will free up around 1,300 spaces, 1,300 spaces on a fortnightly basis, and about 500 of those will be retained as contingency spaces, and we'll be looking at decommissioning some MIQ facilities used by travellers arriving from low-risk countries. This is an exciting day, Ardern said. The bubble is a new chapter, and she is sure many families and those in the sector will welcome it. So if you do have whanau across both countries, or you are looking forward to travelling, why don't you get in touch? I'd love to hear from you. 2101 is the number to text. With us is Professor Tony Blakely, a New Zealand epidemiologist and public health expert based at the University of Melbourne. Professor Blakely, kia ora.
Kia ora.
Nice to have you on. Back on. Is this what you were expecting?
Oh, yeah, it's good news. The announcements are entirely sensible. I can't really fault them. Pretty much exactly what you'd expect. Two extra comments. One, it has taken a little bit longer than was desirable, but part of that has been New Zealand sort of watching the chaos over here in Australia and learning it, which is my second point. As I was quite interested that Jacinda Ardern actually said that New Zealand has the flexibility to control its borders with different states and play it as it sees it. And I think that's a fantastic evolution, because that's what we've learned over here, is that whilst it's chaotic with 56 different borders between eight states and territories, each state does retain its autonomy, and that has actually worked out quite well in the long run. So I think it's great to see New Zealand jumping in.
Right. And you believe that we are ready to open up for this travel bubble, and that it is relatively low risk?
Yeah, it's been low risk for a time, but it's not zero risk. So we can't hide from the fact that there still remains a possibility that me, when I get on the plane to visit my mum in July, I might unwittingly bring the virus over. The chance is really, really low, but it still exists. But we've learnt with the several outbreaks we've had through Australasia, so both Australia and New Zealand, is that our contact tracing systems, our QR apps, all that stuff is really working rather well. And if I did by mistake bring the virus over, we'd pretty quickly mop up those people who I spoke to and spent time with, and probably have it under control pretty quickly.
Tony, do you think that this is the future of travel? I guess I'm looking for clues here as how we might manage travel to other countries beyond Australia in a world where COVID is going to be around for a long time.
Yeah, no, this is just the start. This is like step one. I can't really think how many steps higher the staircase might be, but let's say it's five or so. The next step up will be once we start including vaccination status and whether or not people can travel. The next step up that will be once Australia and New Zealand have got high enough vaccination coverage rates that we're resilient to people coming in. That will be the real tipping point. That's when we'll get back to something like normal. What could completely scupper it, though, is if we get some virus mutants that become resistant to vaccines and we're taken back down a couple of steps on that staircase. But this is a sensible start to it, and I can see the pathway forward. It's not guaranteed, though, in case this virus does mutate to a more infectious form again that is resistant to the vaccines. But let's not worry about that today.
If our vaccine makers continue to be able to respond to the variants, what kind of time frame are you thinking for people to perhaps be able to travel beyond Australia without quarantine?
So from a Kiwi perspective, you can certainly leave Kiwiland now, just getting back in. I get asked this question a lot. So from the Australian perspective, I say that we could start relaxing our borders once we're getting up beyond 30 or 40% vaccination coverage. I'm pretty hesitant about the exact number because we're learning from watching other countries, and we would only make that decision when we had an idea what variants were out there circulating and their infectiousness. So there's a lot more water to go under the bridge. There's a lot more uncertainty. But Australasia, both Australia and New Zealand, Taiwan, we're all in really good positions to watch what happens in the rest of the world and set our policy settings as we go, which is just fine.
All right, we have our other panellists as well. Peter, do you want to jump in with a question?
Well, I'm certainly all for opening up. And I'm with Tony. I think the politics seem to be quite clear. It's a good place to be if you're the Prime Minister, where National says open yesterday and a lot of others say, well, don't open now. So it seems like at least the politics looks awfully good.
Yeah, so we're down the middle now.
What do you think this means for our Pacific Island neighbours like Samoa, Fiji, Tonga? Do you think that we might be able to extend our bubbles to them? Because they're desperate for some tourism.
Yeah, essentially, yes. So the principle from an academic point of view is you make your bubble as big as what you trust the outer border to be. So New Zealand's looked at Australia and said, yep, we trust your outer border with the rest of the world and we'll work with you. And that should be the same with the Pacific Islands, I'm assuming. I don't know too much about it. But I do think the Pacific Islands could feel a little bit hard done by and that they've just kind of been ignored by massive numbers, not enough numbers. But I see no reason why they can't be joining this bubble soon.
Well, just from me, I actually got a few questions. We'll try and put a couple to you. But look, I suppose the challenge, and I think Nikki has brought it up a bit, is managing the risk of importing the virus from red zone countries. You look at international news. Gosh, you've got Europe now struggling in this battle with coronavirus. A host of highly contagious mutations are acting like a, to quote The Guardian, a whole new pandemic. Then closer to home, Papua New Guinea, you brought that up a couple of weeks ago, really struggling. Yep. What of that situation?
Okay, so there's two questions in there. Regarding Papua New Guinea, the very few places in Australia that have fully vaccinated their communities are those in the very northern tip there between us and Papua New Guinea. So we have built a little bit of a no-man's land, a protection zone there. Back to your general question about coming in from other countries, the risk still remains of country hopping. So somebody could fly from the UK to here, but when they're coming here, they still need to go through 2 weeks quarantine. So they're not going to be able to hop straight onto another plane into New Zealand. So from New Zealand's perspective, once Australia starts to relax and say only require 7 days of quarantine because our vaccine coverage has hit whatever the magic percentage is, New Zealand will obviously relook at the policies regarding that risk of somebody hopping from a straight out of a shortened quarantine or straight from one plane to the other. But I would assume from this point on that Australia and New Zealand will probably work quite closely together to set the same settings on how we take in people from other countries. At least I hope that's the case.
Sure. Final question there, Nikki.
Just managing this within the airports seems to be such a challenge. And with the crews, logistically, somebody must have a bad headache at the moment.
Yes. It was actually, I've been speaking with Annette King quite a bit. She used to be my local MP and I knew her as Minister of Health and she's now the New Zealand High Commissioner in Canberra. And it was her who brought this up with me first when we talked months and months ago about this. She said, Tony, what about the airports? And then she explained to me, she's obviously privy to the discussions. It's actually quite a headache and it's the difference between the states and territories here where most of the airports here are separated from the international airports. So the travel within Australia is a lot easier. And so keeping that inflow of people from Australia separate from anybody from Singapore is mission critical. They've had plenty of time, the airports, to sort it out by now. And it's not that hard conceptually. It's just logistically you've got to create those barriers.
Tony, it's lovely to have you on again. I appreciate your time. That is Professor Tony Blakely, a New Zealand epidemiologist and public health expert at Melbourne, the University of Melbourne. And look, if you are looking to book flights to Australia, text us 2101 and why. But one person who is really excited to get to Australia, super excited to see her sister, is from Auckland, Jane Carlson. Jane, kia ora, welcome to the panel.
Thank you.
And I understand you're looking forward to seeing your sister and introducing her to who?
To my six-month-old, Alexander, who was born during lockdown.
Pretty exciting.
I think there's going to be a lot of people, you know, who've had grandchildren and nieces and nephews. It's going to be so cool for people to be able to do that. You must be so excited about being able to see each other again and touch each other.
And touch.
Exactly. Like, all of her, she's got three little boys under six and they are really excited to meet their little cousin.
Oh, has it been hard with whānau being sort of so distant like this? Has it been tough, Jane?
It's been really strange, just that feeling that you can't just jump on a flight. Like, what happened if somebody got sick, or, you know, my mum's elderly, what happened, you know, that feeling of just being disconnected and not being able to just get on a plane, which we were just so used to.
Well, all the best for the flight, and I guess you're going to book your tickets as soon as possible online?
Well, I'm going to try. It's going to see how expensive it is. And
yes.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of a worry. And then just to see what we can get.
Good on you, Jane. Thank you very much. And all the best for taking little Bubba over to Australia.
Nikki, when was the last time you were on a flight?
Well, actually, I was in the UK in February last year because my mum wasn't well. So I got back 2 weeks before we went into lockdown. And now I sort of think it was a bit of a blessing that I got to spend that time with them, because they've been in lockdown pretty much for a year. They're, you know, high risk elderly people. But they've embraced Zoom, and they've got a phone and an iPad. And so that has been great, just to be able to stay in touch with them.
Right after the headlines at 4:30, we're going to be talking to Fergus Brown, whose body represents around 300 sites, more from the tourist angle. What about you, Peter? When was the last time you were on a flight?
Yeah, very similarly. I could have been the person who brought the disease into New Zealand, fortunately. I think we were clear of that, but we came back just before lockdown after seeing the whole family. I wonder how quickly everyone will get used to things again.
Yeah.
Whether everyone will get to airports, whether they'll be nervous on flights, whether they'll just forget, oh, that's right, we spent a whole year without ever getting on a plane.
A lot of people texting, my daughter-in-law will book ASAP to see her family. And Phil says, Brisbane as soon as I can to see my best friend who is dying with leukemia and has about a month to live. So thank you so much for all your correspondence here. Someone says, it's about $1,200 return to Melbourne. So the price will be another thing, won't it, Nikki?
Yeah, I mean,
it won't be the prices of old.
Hopefully it will be relatively short term, and we'll get back into, you know, it being affordable, and the airlines will be kind of, but they've all got a lot of losses to make up for, so it is certainly not going to be like the old days.
You're on the panel in Z National. Just to recap there, if you haven't heard, New Zealanders will be able to, and Australians will be able to travel freely between their respective countries from 11:59 p.m. April the 18th. It's time for headlines.